हरे कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नमस्ते सरस्वती गौरवाणी निर्विशेष शून्यवादी
हरे कृष्ण
रीडिंग फ्रॉम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 1 पर्टिकुलर हिस्ट्री ऑफ द लाइफ ऑफ अजामिला एंड वी हैव कंटिन्यू 43 ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Viparitani, just the opposite, inauspicious, sinful activities. Cha, also, Anakaha, O sinless inhabitants of Vaikuntha, Karinam, of the fruit of workers, Gunasangaha, contamination of the three modes of nature, Asti, there is, Dehavan, anyone who has accepted this material body, Na, not, he, indeed, Akarmakrit, without performing action. Translation. O inhabitants of Vaikuntha, you are sinless, but those within this material world are all karmis, whether acting piously or impiously. Both kinds of action are possible for them because they are contaminated by the three modes of material nature and must act accordingly. One who has accepted a material body cannot be inactive, and sinful action is inevitable for one acting under the modes of material nature. Therefore, all the living entities within this material world are punishable. Purport. The difference between human beings and non-human beings is that a human is supposed to act according to the direction of the Vedas. Unfortunately, men manufacture their own ways of acting without reference to the Vedas. Therefore, all of them commit sinful actions and are punishable. Om Ajnana Vimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Vigamyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishnam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Loka Damahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagarjatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakham Vitamscha He Krishna Karna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Yatevacha Patitanam Pavanevo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Yam Pravrajantam Manupetam Arpeta Krityam Dvaipayana Virahakadar Ajubhava Putreti Tanmayatayatara Obhinedu Samhradayam Sam Sarvabhutam Hirdayam Munimanato Smi Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So we are reading from the sixth canto, which is called as Prescribed Duties for Mankind. And this chapter is titled as History of Life of Ajamila. Very interesting is this chapter is talking about a person who is trained as a Brahmana since his childhood. So he's been trained. And he's a very pious gentleman, and he's coming from a very important Brahmanic place in Uttar Pradesh, which we saw as Kanauj. And what happens is, while executing the instructions of the spiritual master, he falls down due to his senses, and as you know, the principle of karma has many deep connotations of why he fell down and what influence he had from his previous births and things like that, and how the senses drag one to a lower animalistic form of life. So now what is happening here, just to set the scene, is he is seeing a dream where he is being dragged by the Yamadutas because he is aware of the misdeeds that he has done in his life. And now he is being dragged by the Yamadutas. While being so done, the Vishnudutas are coming there to stop the Yamadutas to say, you can't drag him because he's our property now, because he chanted the name of Lord Narayan. So during this conversation, what rights do you have? So Vishnudutta are telling Yamadutta that you cannot drag him. But now the Yamadutta are justifying why we have to drag him. So in this verse, in these two verses, Yamadutta are saying that what all sins this guy has done has been witnessed, we saw yesterday, has been witnessed by the sun, fire, sky, air, demigods, moon, evening, day, night, directions, water, land, and super soul himself are all witnesses of the activities of the living entity. So in one sense, life is everywhere, and actually God is everywhere. There is life everywhere because God is everywhere. God is the omnipresent, omniscient, and omnipotent reality that exists. And therefore, nothing can be hidden from him. You know a famous story where this experiment was done even in many sampradayas, in the Ramananda sampradaya also. Ramananda was given by his guru a banana and was asked to eat in a place where nobody can see him, where all his disciples ate the banana and gave different descriptions that we ate it in a cave, we waited it in the night, etc. Ramananda Charya said, sorry my dear spiritual master, I cannot eat it because there is no place where nobody can see me. Ashesha Shakshina. Ashesha Shakshina, Sakshi means a witnesser. So Ramananda Charya said, I can see the Lord's presence everywhere. So he is the witnesser of everything. In fact, nothing can happen without his knowledge. So therefore I haven't eaten the banana. But this witnessing of the Lord is also witnessed by the Devata. So therefore here in the last verse, when it means the sun, the fire, the sky, the air, it doesn't mean just the elements, it means the presiding deities of those elements. So when we say fire, it means the Agni Devata. And when we say Agni Devata, it is not the fire Devata, the Devata who is the presiding deity of fire, but the Vishnu Antargata of the fire, means the Vishnu Aradhaka which the Agni Devata worships. So therefore, everything is possible because Vishnu, Vishati Tat Vishnu, Vishati means that which is spread everywhere. That is what the etymological meaning of Vishnu means. So in this case, what has happened is the Yamadutta is saying, actually, we have witnessed, we have recorded all of this. And the recorder of these witnesses is Yamaraj. That is why he is called as Dharmaraj. Anything happens according to Dharma or opposite to Dharma is witnessed by the Supreme Lord and recorded by Yamaraj and his descendants and his followers. So the Yamadutas are saying, we have witnessed it, we have a record of all his past misdeeds. So this guy is supposed to go to Yamapuri, where he needs to be punished. So, and who will be punished? In 43, they said, these many witnesses have deviated from their prescribed regulative duties. Everyone engaged in duty activities is suitable for subject to punishment according to his sinful acts. Who doesn't follow his prescribed duties? And what is prescribed duty? We have to question that. What is a prescribed duty? What does karma mean? And then in the next verse, what's interesting is both types of karma, whether it's papa or punya, both kinds are possible for them. Why? Because karyanam guna sangosti. Very interesting verse because this is also coming in the Vedas, and Krishna also says this in the Bhagavad Gita. Karanam guna sangasya. He tells us 13th chapter. So one who has accepted a material body cannot be inactive, and sinful action is inevitable. That's why debatable. One who is embodied cannot be inactive. That's the first thing. One cannot be inactive. What are the examples of inactive things in this material creation? Is there anything inactive? A rock, probably. A rock is inactive. but under a microscope, even a rock is not inactive. We know that. Atoms are always moving. So, this prakriti is called as charachara prakriti. So, here Yamudra is saying, one who accepts a material body cannot be inactive, and sinful action is inevitable. For one acting under the bonds of material nature, therefore all living entities within this material world are punishable. It's quite interesting. Prabhupada writes, all living entities in this material world are punishable. Now, Prabhupada has given four lectures on this verse, 44, around the world in those times. And Prabhupada, every lecture is a different perspective. How Prabhupada brings a different perspective of this verse. In one of the verses he says, Dehavan. Dehavan means one who has accepted this material body. And Prabhupada says, the etymology of the word van. Van means vyapta, or one who has obtained. See, we said Bhagavan. Bhagavan means one who has obtained, or one who has Bhagat. Bhaga means opulences. In the same way, Dehavan, one who has obtained the material body. Sanskritam is a very interesting language, because every word in Sanskritam has a meaning. Like in English language, we don't have meanings for nouns. Nouns means we don't have meanings. You can't qualify a noun, for example. But that's not the case in Sanskritam, because every word has an etymology behind it. There's perhaps no language like Sanskritam which has etymology. Deha also has a meaning. Deha, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Dehinosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yauvananja tatha deha antara prapte dhiras tatra namogyati. Krishna says, deha means deha upajayati iti deham. That which grows and ultimately gets subdued is called deha. You see, there are two words which is indicated in the material body. Krishna uses both the words. He uses deha, and also he also uses sharira. Shariram yadavapnu. Shirate iti shariram, that which actually depletes is called shariram. That which grows is called deham. That is why Krishna uses dehinosmin, dehina asmin, yatha dehe. Deham is one who is embodied inside the body. So here, dehavan nahi akarma kriti. So one who has obtained the material body, naturally the body grows. So there is movement in the body. And the body moves because there is the presence of jiva. And anything moves because jiva is dynamic. Jiva is not static in one sense. It is dynamic. Therefore, body grows because there is a presence of jiva. There is life inside it. So, dehavan here means, because the jiva has accepted a material body, he has to work. And because he has to work, and he is in the material world, he has to work under the three modes of material nature. Nothing can escape the three modes of material. Imagine this complex creation that Krishna has created. There is no way out. There is absolutely no way out. Every word, deed, object, thought is under the modes of creation. Is under the three modes of materialism. Because this whole material creation is under the three modes of materialism. So nothing can escape it in that sense. Now, that is why this material world is called as prison house. And the ropes that bind us here are called as the three modes of materialism. But here, they are using etaya adharmo pitnataha. So these deities, the sun, the fire god, sky, air, demigods, moon, evening, night, they are observing the dharma and adharma of the jiva. So what is the dharma of the jiva? Prabhupada many places says, Krishna says, mamai vamsho jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana. You are all my vamshas, my expansions. So therefore, a default dharma of the jiva is what? Jivaya swarupa hoy? Krishna nityaras. We are always eternal servitors of the Lord. This is the only dharma of a jiva. Everything else is adharma. Bhagavatam in the second verse also says, dharma prochita kaitavatra paramo nirmat saranam satam. So the second verse says, all materially motivated religion has to be given up. But we will see actually in today's discussion, what does it actually mean by giving up materially motivated religion or materially motivated duties. So this whole prison house is managed by the Lord through His own agents. Like we have Durga, we have Lord Shiva, and all of the credits and the account balances are kept by the accountant, and the accountant is Dhanaraj. He keeps the account of who has done how many pious activities and what are one's impious activities, and based on that he will be awarded or punished for it. And what's interesting is the material world also has a similar establishment. We have prisons in the material world also. I remember when I was working in a MNC, we were doing a project for a company called as Group 4. Have you heard of Group 4? Group 4 Securities. It's a company called as Group 4. You must have seen when they come and load the ATMs around Melbourne. So you see that there's a G4 on their shirts. So Group 4 company is one of the biggest company who manages security things. And one of the services there they also do is load cash in their ATMs. But their predominating business is managing prisons. It's a big, big company. And it's a private company. And in the United States, most of the prisons are privately managed. It's not managed by the country as by the government. It's outsourced to the private company. So as soon as you outsource it, what comes along with it? Cost. Huge cost. It's not cheap. And I was researching and I found US spends somewhere between $30,000 to $100,000 per prisoner in the US based on which state the prisoner is. Because the amenities also change. Can you even imagine? $80,000 they spend per prisoner per year, which is more than the per capita income of a citizen in the United States of America. So much they spend to maintain a prisoner. Now of course the conditions of the prisoner has to be etc. But despite so much expenditure or spending on a prisoner, when the prisoner comes out of the prison, most of the times he is more spoiled than when he went before he went in. Because these prisons are also breeding grounds for activities. Why? Because even these prisons are completely under the mode of demons. What to talk of the other demons? So therefore, these prisons that we see in the material world are not transformative. But the prison of this material world that Krishna has created is transformative. Because the whole idea of this prison house is to transform the consciousness. How the Lord transforms it, we will see actually. That is why they are saying, therefore all living entities in this material world are punishment. Now that is why there are many reformatory departments in this material world. One is this material world where we are embodied, and then based on what we have to be punished or rewarded, we have Yamaraj's decision, the court of Yamaraj, where he will be sending us to reformatory prisons, where we have to reform our consciousness. There is actually no escape at all. That's why Krishna says in the 13th chapter, 22nd verse, Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti janguna karanam gunasangosya sadasadhyomi janmashu. The living entity in the material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of material nature. This is due to his association with that material nature, thus he meets with good and evil among various species. See, we have read in the 3rd chapter also that whoever has taken a body in the material world has to suffer. And he cannot say without action, is it not? Now one may say, Prabhuji, we are vegetarians, we don't kill anyone, we don't trouble anyone, we are just, you know, vegans. Some people are, you say, veganism is a big thing. We are vegans, they say. But if you really see, I'll give you an example. Everybody knows about moong dal sprouts. It's a gross example, please don't feel bad about it. Moong dal sprouts is nutritious, we all agree. But now see from a spiritual angle. What is moong dal sprouts from a spiritual angle?
Living entities.
What type of living entities are they? When they sprout?
Yeah, they're
Very young living entities. Is it not? Very young, tiny living entities. What do we do with them? We boil them and eat them. Is it not? And yet we say, is there sin involved in it? You can't escape. There is sin. Because cooking and eating vegetables also is sin. Pull out a carrot from the ground. Is it not sinful? Pull out a beetroot from the ground. It's sinful.
cut up coriander and cut it out and chop into pieces, is there life in coriander? Probably you're not hearing it scream, but there is pain involved. So, this material world, Bhagavatam says, padam padam yat vipadam nadesham. Every step there is danger. This is why it is so complex creation. Nobody can escape. That is why Yamadutas are saying, therefore, all living entities in this material world are punishable. Everyone is a sinner. Everyone is a sinner. So many people try to make some makeshift arrangements. They put a cloth around their mouth so that they won't breathe bacteria. But you are still breathing. Bacteria, you can't have a permeable membrane through which bacteria cannot enter. You still have to open your thing to eat. You still have to drink water. Is it not? So, sinning, by default, in this material world, you can't escape. Now, that is why what is involved, what's beautiful is, the Vedic process has given a thought behind all of this. That is why you will see different type of processes. You will see Jnana Yogis. There is a section called as Jnana Yogis. Jnana Yogis are those people who will say, we will not do any karma. Because karma means sin. So therefore, we will not do any karma. We will only study the scriptures, speculate, but we will abstain from any work. Therefore, we become sinless. But then the Shastri people also, there is a giving debate. Yes, sir, but to read, you need to maintain yourself. You are still breathing, you are still drinking water, you are still eating. So how can you be free from sins? Yeah, we agree, but we are reducing the sins, you see. Yeah, but you are still sinning, isn't it? You might not go to a longer term of a prison, but you are still going to prison anyways. So what's the point? You're a big thief or a small thief, you're a thief. So these situations to go on. That is why, is there a way out of this? Is there a way out of this? That is why in the 8th canto, the devatas, the devatas come to Krishna and pray like this. Sattvam vidhatsva khila lokapala vayam yadartha stavapadamulam samagataste bahirantamatmam kimvanya vidnapyamashesha sakshinah. They come to Krishna and say, my dear Lord, what can we tell you? Because you know everything. Sometimes we pray to God, we pray to Krishna, please do this, please do that. Doesn't he know? He knows everything. He is Ashesha Shakshina. He is Ashesha Shakshina, means he is a witnesser of everything. He knows what's going on in my heart, what's going on in someone else's heart, is going on, what's going on in my boss's heart. Everything he is aware of. He is also aware of what will I do in my next hour, what will I do, what will be my repercussions. He knows everything. He is the 15th chapter, Krishna says, what is that verse?
Krishna
says, I am Hridi Sannivishta. I am inside the hearts of everyone, so I know everything. So the devatas are praying, you know everything, my dear Lord. So what is that we have to come and ask you, okay? So you are aware of everything. So he is Ashesha Shakshina. So therefore, in this creation, Lord is present everywhere. But all we have to understand is, it is tainted with material nature. So by the three modes of material nature. If you see in the second canto, the third canto, the starting of creation itself, Mahat Tattva is agitated by the three modes of material nature under the influence of time. So the Lord here is present in so many forms. He is present as time, He is present as a witnesser, He is present as a doer, everything. So therefore nothing can escape Him. That is why in the Shastras, this is also very important, because in the Bhagavad Gita, as we move from the 3rd chapter to the 18th chapter, many times there is a confusion. Probably then, is it good to do Karma Yoga? Is it good to do Jnana Yoga? Is it good to do Bhakti Yoga? What to do? What not to do? There is a lot of confusion. Also, probably it's better to do Bhakti Yoga, not to do Karma Yoga. And is Varnashrama Dharma required? So what is Varnashrama Dharma? All of these. So when the question comes of prescribed regulative duties, there is no doubt that it is Varnashrama. It is talking about Varna and Ashrama. Why it is important? Because everyone is tainted by three modes, we all agree. When we are tainted by three modes, there are two natures we have. What are the two natures we have? Yeah, that is also right. But for every jiva there is two natures. One is internal, one is external. Is it not? We are embodied. So therefore I have an external nature. Is it not? And external nature can be two ways again. One is genetic, one is karmic. Genetic means I have obtained a specific body based on my descendant, my father, there is a genetic makeup that I have. This is entirely external. And the second thing is karmic. I have my own condition from many lifetimes. So therefore I have certain proclivities in this life. For example, let's say a parent has two children. They are born one to the same parents, both go to the same school. Let's say twins, they are born at the same time. Imagine. Same time, that means their Janma Kundalini should match. Because they are born at the same time, same place, everything is same. Yet they can have drastically different proclivities. Quite amazing, isn't it? According to Jataka, of course, according to Jataka also they should say, according to time, birth, place, it should match. Yet they will have different proclivities. Why? Because even they may look the same also. They will look the same, exactly the same. They are twins, identical twins. Yet even though their genetic makeup might be the same, their karmic makeup will be different. So science will not be able to explain why their natures are different. That is why Shastra says, Swabhavastu Pravartate. Swabhava means intrinsic nature of a jiva. Of course, that swabhava also has two components. One is a spiritual swabhava, one is a conditioned swabhava. So when it comes to conditioning, we are all conditioned in certain way. So when we saw Bhagavad Gita, what was the swabhava of Arjuna? He was a kshatriya. But what was he saying? I will not fight. So Krishna said, you have to fight. But everybody will put probably sarvadharman pariteja. Yes, Krishna said sarvadharman pariteja, but then did Arjuna go home and start chanting? No, he fought the battle. So then how do you apply the principles of karma yoga and bhakti yoga and understand them together without a conflict? So that is the most important thing to understand when we understand dharma and adharma. That is why Yamadutas are saying all living beings should be punished, because in the previous verse they said they deviated from their prescribed regulated duties. What does this regulated duties mean? That is why it is very important to understand karma yoga correctly. Krishna gives many examples. He gives the example of Janak Maharaj and all of them, that they all achieve perfection by doing their duties properly. And yet there are bhaktas also, there are devotees also. So this samanvayata we have to bring. When you talk of yoga ladder, karma yoga, and then think of jnana yoga, and then ashtanga yoga, and then bhakti yoga, it doesn't mean that when you become bhakti yogis, we get rid of karma yoga. That's the very most important thing to understand, that karma, you, for an embodied person, getting away from karma yoga is not possible, because karma means activity, action. Action has to be performed. Eating, sleeping, at least has to be performed. Walking has to be done. So there is kriya involved. When there is kriya, karma is there. When there is action, there is reaction. So karma cannot be escaped in this material creation. So how one should do karma, and what is that, we have to understand. Krishna in the 18th chapter says, Sve sve karmani abhirataha samsiddhim lavate naraha svakarma nirata siddhim yatha vindati arjuna. Sve sve karmani. Whatever one's conditioned nature is, that one has to do. See, in the material world, we sometimes, even as devotees, get confused. You see, if somebody is a mother or if somebody is a father, sve sve karmani. You have to do your activity, you have to do your duty. Generally, it is human nature. When we are attracted to someone, it is generally the human nature to try to do what that person is doing. Emulate. For example, if a disciple is under the guidance of a spiritual master, it's very easy that the disciple will think, how I think I should also become like a spiritual master. For example, if a disciple is a brahmachari, he is seeing a grihastha spiritual master, he think, oh, my spiritual master is so comfortably leading, yet he is so advanced, he will become a spiritual master. I should also get married, you know. It's very, very natural to get like this. Or somebody is in an office atmosphere and he sees his boss. My boss is controlling 15 people. He can earn more. I should also become my boss. Similarly, now I'll give another typical example. A wife will think a husband. My husband goes to work and he comes home happily. So I should also try to go to work and come home happily. You see, generally, whomever you get influenced with, everybody is interested to do someone else's work. Human nature. Why? Because they are not happy doing their work. They are not happy what they are, where they are. They are always looking grasses greener on the other side. Wife, husband, one man, husband, wife, one man. Husband is thinking, this lady sits at home all the time, eating, sleeping all day, I am going to work every day. My colleague has a dog. She said, I am envying my dog. I said, why? She said, every day I get out of my house and lock the door, my dog gets on the sofa and cuddles himself and sings. And I feel, here I am going to work and this dog is comfortably sitting on a sofa. And she said, how I wish I become a dog like this. Oh. I said, oh my God, don't make that wish. You haven't seen dogs in India. Not everyone has a couch, you see. So she was wishing to be a dog. The reason is, they are not happy where they are. Why? Because they do not know what their prosperity will be like. They do not know, first of all, what is their nature. How do I endow my nature in my activities and still be happy? That's why Krishna says, Sve Sve Karmani Abhiratata. But how do you execute this karma? Yes, Prabhuji, you are telling that you have to do work. But even by doing work, then there is another category of people. You know, one is contemplating that you have to do your work. Another category of people is work is worship. I think, whatever I do, I am a karma yogi. I will go to work, I am a karma yogi. That's also false, because he is also a sinner. It doesn't mean that just because you are so enthusiastic to do your work and you are so happy, what is it called as? It is laced with which mode of material nature? Mode of passion. You see people around you, I am passionate about my work. I am a very passionate person. I don't want to do this. But Krishna says, Sarvarambha Parityagi. Don't be passionate. Because passion also will gradually lead to ignorance. You'll fall down. Because what will happen? If you show passionate, what will happen? There will be another passionate guy. The moment he sees someone else passionate, how dare he so passionate than me? Then he wants to push him back. So, I'm first, you see. Competition will start. So that is why civilization and transcendence are opposite sides of the same state. You can't have a civilization and transcendence at the same time. Civilization is in competition. Transcendence is no competition. It is so hard. That is why if it's one family, there is no competition. That's why transcendence is the opposite of civilization. Civilization means build a competitive society. Transcendence means build a compassionate society, not competitive society. So that's the thing. But then how do you draw the line between compassion and competition? So the understanding is, we have to understand our swabhava, and the crux of that is, when we are doing our karma, we have to see how we can purify that karma. How we can purify that karma. Krishna says, by karma one can get purified. That is the person, that is the definition of karma yogi. Krishna says, nahi kaschit kshanamapi. Not even a moment you can say, calm. You have to do some work. Even in sleep, even in deep sleep, we are breathing. So there is activity all the time. When the body, when the soul exits the body, the soul continues to act. There is not a moment where the soul is dead in one sense. Soul is always alive. So therefore, karyatehi avashak karma sarva prakriti dayatu. So there is no way that the jiva can escape the three modes of material nature. He has to act. But how one should act, that is the key. Now, how can karma be taraka? How can we do karma and that karma can take us ahead? Krishna says this in many places. One of the verses that Krishna says is, yajna arthat karma namyatra lokoyam karma vandana tadartam karma mauntaya mukta sangatva samachara. Whatever one does, one has to do it for Vishnu. Why does Krishna say this? Why does he say that you have to do it for Vishnu? So first thing is, as embodied living entities, we cannot be static, we have to do activity, so karma is imperative. But you have to do it for Vishnu. Why? Because any activity that you do is coming always under the three modes of material nature. So to escape the three modes of material nature, the only way is to bring someone who is beyond the three modes of material nature, which is Vishnu. That is why yajnartha karma namyatra lokoyam karma bandhanaha. Karma bandhan means any activity you do, you are bound. As I said, the example of sprout, you are eating sprouts. The moment you pluck them and boil them, You have not even eaten them, but in the process of boiling itself, you are killing. Cooking means killing. Then there are lawful enthusiasts also. They say, you don't cook, you eat raw. This is eating, isn't it?
So, there is sin involved every minute. So, therefore, when we cook, we bring in Krishna's element there. So, when we cook for Krishna, when we offer for Krishna, what is happening there? Let's do a little bit of analysis. What is happening there? We are still acting, we are still cooking, we are still sprouting, we are still offering. There is some karya going on. So, what is happening? Karmana jnana atramanti. That is why karma yoga leads to jnana yoga. Why they say this is because by doing certain activities in the right consciousness, we obtain knowledge, realization. That is why karmana jnana atramanti. By doing certain activities, we attain realizations. So when we do it for Krishna, realizations come. Oh my God, I realize that even eating sprouts is simple. So this realization comes up. Therefore, yajna shishtha sinas santo chante sarva kilvishai te togam papa bhunjate te togam papa. So yajna shishtha. So what will devotees do then? Oh my God, Krishna, I am so helpless here. I can't breathe. If I am breathing, I am sinful. If I am walking, I am sinful. So Krishna, I am in such a horrible situation. Please protect me, Krishna. So when I am doing execution of karma, will lead to jnana. What jnana? This is not impersonalistic jnana. This is jnana about Krishna. This is a jnana about my dependence on Krishna. That knowledge will come. Therefore, karmana jnana matanati. That is why one of the acharyas had said, karma ve tarako. In Kannada there is a song. Karma ve tarako means, by doing karma only, you can get liberated. What karma? Karma with lace with bhakti karma it is called. So the moment I bring the aspect or element of Krishna in my activities, then that is not karma yoga. That's why Prabhupada sometimes uses karma yoga interchangeably with devotional service. Is it not? Of course, devotional service in a technical term is the 9, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. But these 9 principles of devotional practices can be laced with all karma yoga principles of activities. So therefore, when Krishna told Arjuna, pick up your bow and fight, Arjuna did fight. He did pick up. So he picked up his bow and he fought a war. But yet it was devotional service to Krishna because he was remembering Krishna while he was doing it. He was doing it for the order of the spiritual master. So that's a very important point to understand. That karma is imperative for the embodied personalities. But I'll tell you two contrary examples of this also. Shukadeva Goswami. The words that I chanted, Yam Pravrajantam Anupetam Anupeta Kritiam Dvaipayana Viraha Kātara Adhuhāva Putreti Tanmaya Taravobhe. He's asking, he's praying, and this is a prayer by glorifying Shukadeva Goswami, Sukadeva Goswami saying this prayer, that Shukadeva Goswami abandoned all his dasha samskaras. So when we say prescribed regulated duties, samskaras are very important. Samskaras means purificatory ceremonies. These purificatory ceremonies are purifying our consciousness at every stage. Sukadeva Goswami did not go through any of this. He just walked away. Huh? No threat ceremony, no Gayatri, nothing. But can we emulate Sukadeva Goswami? He walked out naked. Can we follow him? Or can we imitate him? We cannot imitate him. Take the other example. Jadabharata. Jadabharata was wearing a sacred thread. But he did not chant his Gayatri. He was acting like a lunatic, right? But can he imitate him? No. But these personalities, examples of these personalities, or Rishabdev, for example, the examples of these personalities are given because the prescribed duties are for the embodied. There are two reasons we have to do for prescribed duties. First thing is, I am embodied and I have to do it. Why I have to do it? So that karma can become tarak for me. That karma, through that karma I can gain realizations. Very important. So what is the importance is, we have to do sveste karma. Our own duties, don't try to do someone else's duty. Do your duty. Your constitutional position at this point in time, I'm a father, I'm a corporate work, I go to corporate work, I have a family to maintain. Do it so perfectly while remembering Krishna. Not having material goals. We have to understand. That's why Krishna gives this philosophy very nicely.
karmanyevadhikaraste matreshu kadachana. He says your duty, your right is to do the activities, but the phala is mine. I know what to give you. Ma phaleshu kada, don't stake a claim on your phala. I will give you phala. So this is very important to understand that I have to do my duty, understand what my area of influence is, and then execute my duty. Very important. And then once it is done for the embodied, right? For the unembodied, what do you mean by unembodied? These are personalities who are beyond bodily conception of life. For them, these prescribed duties do not apply. So that is why we have to understand this very importantly. Because Jadabharata and Shukadeva Goswami, they are ever liberated souls. Even this material body, they are unaware of their existence. When we chant the mantra, Vandeham Shri Guru, you see, what is the name that Nityananda Prabhu has given them? Avadhutam. Avadhuta means Avadhuta Shikamani. Nityananda Prabhu was Avadhuta Shikamani means Avadhuta means they have a material body, but they are not materially conscious at all. For them, prescribed duties are of no use because they are already transcendentally situated in their consciousness. Because prescribed duties is to take us to that consciousness. But if somebody is already there in their consciousness, for him it is not required. But for everyone else, it is required. First thing. Second thing is, there are personalities who are transcendentally situated but will still follow the prescribed duties. Why do they do that? To set an example. Because if everybody started behaving like Mirabai, you know, there some people will start emulating Mirabai. Mirabai was transcendentally situated in one sense. So therefore everybody should not be emulating Mirabai. Everybody is not Mirabai. They should follow their karma, their regulative principles, their prescribed duties very correctly so that gradually they can come to their transcendental consciousness. Otherwise, it is not possible. Because there is a very interesting verse which Prabhupada quotes. There is only one way you can transcend this material modes. Jnane prayasam udapasya namanta eva jivan tishan mukharitam bhavadiya vartam sthane sita shruti gatam tarvan manobhe yah prayasho jita jito pyasita istrai lokyam. The only way that one can transcend the three modes by tanu, van, manobhir is what? By meditating on namantaya, by paying my obeisances, by actually giving myself to Krishna, by giving my consciousness to Krishna, or by bringing the element of Krishna in my activities. So this verse, Prabhupada writes it in 2 ways, this is from the 10th canto. The devotees, because they dedicate their mind, body, and tanu, van, and mana. Tanu is body, words and mind to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, namanta eva. So therefore that unconquerable Lord gets conquered. Ajita jita pi asi tais trailokyam. But for the non-devotees, no matter what they do, nyame prayasam, they might go on speculating, go on doing material advancement, they will never be able to overcome these three modes of material nature. So the only way out for us to escape this statement of the Yamadutas that all living entities within this material world are punishable. They are punishable. So to escape this is to actually bring the element of Sri Hari, bring the element of Sri Krishna in our lives. Thinking of Krishna, the word Krishna itself, there are so many meanings that one can derive out of Krishna. Three meanings, we can meditate on three meanings of Krishna. Krishna, Krish, again, when you talk of Sanskrit, Krish, you see, Christ also comes from Krish in one sense. Krishna, Krish means Krishi Dhatu. Krishi means, what is Krishi? Agriculture. So agriculture is related to what? Bhumi. So Na means Ananda. One who brings Ananda, one who brings bliss to the land is called Krishna. That is why Bhumi Devi went and prayed to Brahmaji. Then they all go to pray. They pray to the Lord and the Lord said, I'll come down as Krishna. So one who gave Ananda, one who gave bliss to this Bhumi is called Krishna. Or one who gives Ananda or bliss to the residents of this Bhumi is called Krishna. Huh? That is one modern understanding of Krishna. That's why Krishna descended here to show us who Krishna is. That is why Krishna tells in the fourth chapter that janma karma cha medityam evam yo vetti tattvatah. I have come here and my activities are transcendental. If Krishna wouldn't have come here in this material world, how would we know about Krishna? How would we experience about Krishna? Where would have been there? There wouldn't have been any Vrindavan here. So Krishna means one who comes and gives pleasure to us. One who comes and shows us what pleasure is. Because although we are pleasurable by nature, we have a problem. Our problem is our pleasure is shrouded by Ajnana. We see in the third canto, Brahmaji creates five types of ignorances to cover our knowledge. So we are covered, but Krishna never gets covered. That is one understanding of Krishna. The second understanding of Krishna means Krishi also means one who extracts. One who extracts what? One who extracts all our dukkha. Dukkha, samasta dukkha payam is Krishna. And he removes those shortcomings and gives na. Na means ananda. So he removes because he is only Krishna is nirdushta ananda. Nirdushta means he is the only personality who doesn't have the dosha of dukkha inside him. You see? There's a beautiful example. You see, there's one bhajan which disciple of Janvi Mata writes. Dukhi Krishna, that's a real name. Why is Dukhi Krishna? Can Krishna be Dukhi? But how is Krishna Dukhi? Why is he called as Dukhi Krishna? Why is Dukhi Krishna das?
Separation.
Okay, that's one way of understanding.
Dukhi Krishna das or Krishna's?
No, the disciple name is Dukhi Krishna das. Dukhi Krishna. So there's a beautiful understanding. There's another way of understanding that is who is the Sukhi? Who is the Sukhi? One who is Sukha, one who has Sukha, is it not? Can we call ourselves okay? Who is Dhanavan?
One who has money.
One who has money, only he can give money to someone, is it not? One who has money, he can give money to someone. So therefore, can the Dhanavan be affected by the Dhana? No, because Dhana is his property. So he can give it to anyone, is it not? That Dhana cannot subdue him because he is Dhanavan. He is the possessor of it. Therefore, he is Dhanavan. You getting my point? So in the same way, he is Dukhi Krishna. Dukhi means Krishna also because he can give Dukkha to anyone. But that Dukkha might not affect him. But he is a giver of Dukkha to everyone. So therefore, he is Dukhi Krishna to us. Does it make sense? He has Dukkha and Sukha both. But he doesn't get affected of that Dukkha and Sukha. So he creates a material nature. But he doesn't get affected by the three modes of material nature. Because he is the controller of the material nature. Daiviyeshu Gunamayi. He says, I am the controller of the three modes. In the same way, Krishi means Nirdushta. He is the one who removes the Dukkha from us and gives us Ananda. So that's the another meaning of Krishna. And we all know the other meaning is Krishna is Karshayate Krishna, one who pulls up towards transcendence. He is also called Krishna. That is why he is called as Sadananda. Sadananda means Krishna, it is said, when he was here in this planet, never was there a time when Krishna was frowning. He was ever smiling. Even in the battlefield, he was smiling. He was always smiling. That is why when Arjuna was asking the questions, Krishna prahasanni bhavati. Krishna was always smiling. Vande vandyam sadanandam. He is called as sadanandam. There is no dukkha in, but we have dukkha. That is the difference between Krishna and us. That is why he is also called as Hara or Hari. Hara and Hari are meaning the same. Hara means one who also does Haran. Haran of what? Haran of dukkha from us. So therefore, if we have to get out of this material clutches and we have to still do our prescribed regulative duties, we have to bring in the element of Krishna within our duties. That is why Niyatam Puru Karmatam. I'll complete this by saying this verse. Madhvacharya says there is one verse which he says, Kuru Bhumshva Chakarma Nijam Niyatam Hari Pada Vinamratiya Satatam Hari Reva Paro Hari Reva Guru Hari Reva Jadat Pitra Matrati. So one has to do their activities. Kuru Bhumshva Chakarma Nijam Niyatam. One has to do what their ordained duties are. but with bhakti, with the element of Krishna in their activities. Otherwise, there is no way that we can escape these three modes of material nature. With this, I'll stop here. If there are any questions or comments.
Prabhu, you talked about Swadharma, like duties of our home. So, and it is also said that we do devotional service, we are watering the roots. So, like my question is regarding my duties towards my family members. So we are doing devotional service, so we are watering the Krishna, we are watering. So the, all the branches which are connected to my family members, relatives, those also now get benefit of that.
Yes.
But somewhere one Prabhuji told me that we have our duties towards my mother, my brother, everyone, and we will never be able to pay back to them. So, how can this is completely opposite understanding, so I think.
It is seemingly opposite. So, repeat your question. I have a family, I am indebted to them, but at the same time, I have to do bhakti. When I do bhakti, all of them will benefit. But then I still have to do my gratitude and I have to repay my parents, my Kirtan King, Devatas and cow and everything. I have to express gratitude to everyone. Seemingly it is opposite, because if I do bhakti, I might serve them, but I am really not serving them directly. Is this your question? How do I then bring, are they opposite sides, or are they, is there any commonality in that, where I do bhakti and I still serve them? Is that the question? I'll give you an example. I know a devotee family where the wife is a devotee, husband is not a devotee. When the wife is sheltered, so she's sheltered, she asked the spiritual, she actually told the spiritual master that, Maharaj, I chant 32 rounds on festivals and I try to do 64 rounds. She said that from the perspective that she wanted to glorify the husband, because husband is very supportive of it. When she said, I chant 32 rounds on the festival days, she had 1 hour lecture from Maharaj. She said, Maharaj said, who told you to chant 32 rounds on festival days? Who told you to chant 32 rounds? I didn't ask you to chant 32 rounds. On festival days, you should be celebrating festivals with your husband and children. You should decorate your house, you should cook for Krishna, you should do kirtan in the house, read Bhagavatam in the house, engage your children in blessing the deities, etc., etc. Now, if you take a step back, it might seem contradictory, because, festival means chanting more. Chanting is devotional service. Now, I have to stop that and serve my husband, family, pushing me back into the material atmosphere, karma bandhana. But this is a problem. You have to understand that what Maharaj said is far more superior than the chanting 32 rounds. I'll tell you how. We are not bhajanandis. We are not bhajanandis. We are ghoshtianandis. Means what? We are preachers. I want to do devotional service for myself. Why don't you think of me when I can actually bring? If Prabhupada thought like that, he wouldn't have never gone to US. Why in the world did he have to go to US and preach to hippies who are immersed in addiction and sense gratification? He could have happily stayed in Vrindavan, chanted 192 rounds and gone back. Why did he go to the US? That was far superior. It was giving Krishna consciousness. It's far superior. Now you understand that instruction from Maharaj Vasudeva in this example I gave you. If this Mataji does not do 16 rounds but does festival, she is preaching to the husband, preaching to the children, engaging the family in devotional atmosphere so that they can also progress. Will she progress by doing this? Of course she will progress. Far better than doing 32 rounds, because Krishna, she is more dearer to Krishna because she is preaching. Does it make sense, Prabhuji? So, repaying doesn't mean that I abandon my duties to repay my parents or my kith and kin. It doesn't mean that I will run away from my responsibilities. Because as devotees, we have far more responsibility for the society as much as we have responsibility for Krishna. Krishna himself, you can see the example. Krishna never a day he abandoned his responsibilities. Krishna says, yeah, whatever I do, everyone will follow. So, the best example we can portray to our own kith and kin is to become the best possible personality in that relationship. For if I'm a good son, if I demonstrate that I'm the best son I can, the first thing is we should not preach to them. Never preach to your family. Because preaching means giving knowledge. They don't need the knowledge. Preaching has to be done by our behavior. So that is a far better preaching than giving knowledge and explaining tattva to them. So I was hearing an interview yesterday. So the best way to preach is to make them inspired from whom they are inspired. So for example, if a parent is inspired by someone, for example, Vivekananda, for example, I'm just giving you a vague example, of course, in my mind. Inspire them to take spirituality in some form or the other. Make them inspired by your behavior. When you go home, offer them prasadam, serve them nicely. When they see your service attitude, they naturally get attracted to Krishna. Our whole idea is to attract them to Krishna, isn't it? That's how we want to repay them. But then repaying has to be done by serving them. So that's what Prabhupada did. If you see Prabhupada went and served the hippies, he cooked for the hippies, got them married. He broke his sannyasa vata by getting them married. Sannyasi is niradhika, but still he got his disciples married. Prabhupada said, I don't have to do this, I should not be doing it. Yet he did that. But that was for the betterment of the society. So in this way we can serve our family far better than thinking only of me, if you know what I mean. But how and when to do it, we have to take advice from people who have done it, who are pioneers in doing it, and then apply that in our life. And that is how I feel. And this is a very common question in devotees. So we have to repay them. How we repay them, but at the same time we should not abandon our 16 norms. So I also have another example where a devotee said, Prabhuji, my parents are first Prabhuji. I will just go and eat whatever they cook, Prabhuji. Because they are parents now, please. A devotee doesn't do that also. A devotee doesn't compromise his things. I'm not saying we should compromise our spiritual values. There is a common ground and it has to be done very judiciously. That's what Krishna, everything he does, Krishna is the most intelligent. So Krishna always has an idea. And devotees always have access to Krishna through senior devotees or through people who have done, through devotees who have done that in their life. So by taking the wisdom from them, we can always bring a samanvaya or these seemingly contradictory things. But actually there is a common ground for that. So therefore, by personally giving seva to each one of them, we can never express gratitude to anyone. But by bringing Krishna in their life, but how to bring Krishna is the only question. Right, that's the only question. That has to be discussed. How do I bring Krishna in their lives? But it can be brought by however we have to bring them. Either by inspiring them, either by giving them service, either by loving them, somehow we have to inspire them to be Krishna. By doing that, they will feel very obliged. By our own behavior actually, by our own attitude, our own behavior towards them, by our own seva towards them. But at the end time, if they don't take Krishna consciousness, that's still fine, but at least they are associated with you, because you are a devotee. So, but at least keep that relationship alive, because if even that breaks, then they don't have any contact with any devotees. So that's what a devotee always thinks. So that's why especially when you are doing Bhakti Riksha, you see, when Bhakti Riksha is angry with you, you can't break relationship with him. You have to somehow keep continuing to relate with him, be friend with him, so that at least he's held on to one arm, one hand to offer devotee, somehow or the other. That probably answers your question to me. Thank you. Yes,
Prabhupada.
Yes, probably maybe a couple of minutes.
Thank you. Very wonderful class. Now you mentioned upon the point we can never escape sinning. Every moment sitting here breathing bacteria. Now, two different schools of thought. Abrahamic schools, they agree we cannot stop sinning, we are born sinners. And in your presentation, you mentioned, we add the Krishna element, who is Trigunadhip, to become ourselves from the implications of sinful actions that inevitably happens.
Yeah.
The Abrahamic tradition approach is, yes, we cannot stop sinning, therefore delegate the whole thing to Messiah. Let him take care of it.
Jesus Christ died for our sins.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the three different schools, they have different messiahs or different personalities. The Chagvak school, different perspective, they say, who's seeing tomorrow? So their approach is, look, if you're saying you're always sinning and you cannot stop that, so why bother with it? I'm just sitting here quietly minding my own business, and something is happening. So, you know, their approach is to help with this whole thing. You know, let me just, who's seeing tomorrow? Let me just go with this. So, I'd rather like to hear your thoughts on how do we approach these two different perspectives. The Abrahamics, who outsource their responsibility towards sinning, and the Hedonists, who say, forget about the whole thing and just think like a good person.
Inherently, we know those are futile ideas, both the Chagvak and the Hedonists and the people who actually misconstrue the teachings of Jesus Christ. Again, acknowledging that it is wrong and somehow or the other bring the element of pure devotion in their life, it's very imperative. Again, when you're preaching to the Hedonists, it's very difficult because again, if they are conducive to devotion practice, that's good. If they are not, then you can't, you basically can't. In the Shastric debates, they used to go to such an extent, especially for the Chagvakas, to say, okay, if you think everything is happening by nature, why are you worried if your wife is pregnant because of someone else? Because you are not witnessing it, anyways. Because you think everything is perfection. You are not witnessing who is, you know, made pregnant, your wife, why are you worried anyways? Because you say everything is perfection. So this is a debate that the Shastric debate goes to this level. So we have to see Hedonists, if they are conducive, then you have to see somehow or the other bring Krishna in their lives. Bring Krishna in their life. If Krishna is brought in their life, their purification is possible. If there is no element of Krishna, there is no element of God consciousness or repentance of what I have done. That repentance has to, that is why prayasita has to come. So they do prayasita, but they think by doing prayasita I can continue to sin. So that element, that sinning, the repeated sinning, will not be, an atonement will not be a panacea for repeated sin. That has to be somehow convinced to them. If these two concepts are explained to them, either by intellectual deliberation or maybe bringing the element of Krishna, giving them prasadam or something like that, that's the only way we can reach them. Or if there are some intelligent people who can read the books and understand what is God, what is the concept of God. Because even faith traditions around the world, the complete concept of God is not available to them. It's not available. I was reading Vijay Prabhu's blog yesterday about how a father in Russia was reading Srimad Bhagavatam second canto from 8 years and he did not have access to Prabhupada's books. So they do not have a complete conception of God. If somehow or the other they are open to read these precious literature that Prabhupada has written, just by holding Prabhupada's book, by reading Prabhupada's few verses or few pages, some purity can be cultivated in them. And gradually, by gradual progression, they can really understand. Because the whole idea is to remove this proclivity of sinning. At least come to the acknowledgement that yes, I am sinning. Yes, I am a sinner and I should not sin. That line that I should not sin, I should stop sinning. That realization has to come in them. So for that, they need to get purified. Unless they are pure, they will not come to that realization. And that purity of thought will come by execution of some aspect of devotional service. Either hearing the names or coming in contact with a pure devotee, giving them prasadam or something like that. So by instilling a seed of devotion in their heart, somehow or the other, I think that purity comes. And then they will start, no, I should not do this, this is not right. I've done this many times in my life, let me now not do it, let me just stop doing it. I feel that is a way for me. Until one comes to that level, because I remember I was in the book table here. A person used to come, go upstairs, have prasadam and walk out. One day he came to me and he said, I want a book, I'm looking for a specific book, it's a recipe book. He didn't know the name. So I said, I had high taste, so I said, this is the one. And he told me, 10 years back, he was going up and down, he came down and picked up high taste, and he read the book walking all the way back home. He lived somewhere close by. And he says he became vegetarian since then on, because he said eat meat, eating is wrong. Just by reading one book, you see, he got really fine. Of course, it was Prashadam. He had just had Prashadam and the book, it was a combination medicine, you see. And he's ever been vegetarian, and he wanted to buy the book for his granddaughter. And he had brought his one granddaughter with him. And he said, I want to buy this book for her. So he bought the book, Higher Taste for. So I saw that the purity of what has gone in. So becoming pure in the book is just a few, maybe a couple of, moments away of taking a pure act of devotional service is very much a possibility for such people. But that's what I think. Purity of existence has to be done. Is that make sense for you? Thank you. Hare Krishna. 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 Hare